Are you ready to take charge of your health and transform your life? Well, get ready because we have the solution for you. Introducing the Nova Fusion 21-Day Wellness and Resilience Challenge, the ultimate program designed to stack massive momentum, achieve peak performance, and spark your transformation. In just 21 days, you can experience a total wellness revolution. Our challenge is jam-packed with daily inspiration, education, downloadable resources, and exciting challenges to keep you fired up and on track. But that's not all. When you join the challenge, you'll also become a member of our exclusive Nova Fusion family. Together, we'll support and uplift one another as we continue to grow and thrive. Unlock the secrets of the world's best wellness and resilience practices to stay mentally and physically fit for a lifetime. From renewing healing practices to transformative high-performance techniques, we've got you covered. And here's something that sets us apart. I believe in these practices so much that I'm offering a money-back guarantee. That's right, if you don't see results, you can get your money back. So you have absolutely nothing to lose, but everything to gain. So what are you waiting for? Take advantage of this limited time opportunity right now. Go to novafusion.co/challenge to sign up and embark on the journey of a lifetime. Let's spark your transformation together. I can't wait to see you on the other side. Welcome to EMG Transformations with Dan Stoll. Each episode will empower you to ignite your inner fire and provide methods to maximize your mental and physical performance. Buckle up and get ready to spark your transformation with Nova Fusion.
3, 2, 1, 0. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome to EMG Transformations. I'm fired up to feature Coach Justin Furtado. Coach Furtado is the founder and director of Beyond the Game Basketball. He is the JV coach for the Pacifica Christian Santa Monica. He is also the Venice Beach High School boys freshman and sophomore head coach and JV and varsity assistant, where they reached the LA City Section D1 Finals in his first year on the staff. Through his guidance and mentorship, he has positively impacted the lives of numerous young athletes, instilling in them the values of teamwork, discipline, and character, both on and off the court. Thank you so much for joining us today, Coach.
Dan, I appreciate you having me on. It's fun to be on the other side of the podcast script.
Yeah, man. Likewise. And it's always, you know, great to talk to fellow coaches and people that are just in the space that you're doing. And I mean, basketball and impact, those are two of my favorite things in life. So I'm excited to have another great conversation with you today.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's dive in, man. So I like to kick things off with, you know, your backstory, and specifically with you, I'm curious, you know, why did you decide to become a basketball coach in the first place? And, you know, specifically, is that something that you always wanted to do, or did something happen that pulled you into that direction?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And I feel like I need to give a little context and history behind the why before we get into it. So kind of, you know, my childhood growing up, sports were my entire life. Basketball and baseball, I actually naturally was better at baseball. Something about the hand-eye coordination, I was always a solid hitter. I wasn't a power hitter, right? Contact hitter, whatever you want to say, right? So basketball, I've always loved basketball. And maybe there's something about the game, and there's just something about things in life that are come a little bit more challenging, right? A little bit more like you have to, the harder you work for something, the more it seems like you fall in love with it, right? At least that was the experience for me. And as we were kind of talking before we came on the show, I went to a very small elementary school. So I I got to play on every single team all the way through. And, one could say I peaked in eighth grade for my basketball because I was MVP. That was the last time I got MVP for basketball. And, it's probably my highest points per game. And then, transitioning into high school, I actually went to the best high school for basketball in my area. And it was a small area. So I'm from Humboldt County and went to Arcata High School. It's a storied franchise or storied franchise, storied high school for just high school basketball. Always has top level talent for the area. So it's always going to be competitive, right? Because I'm coming in from a small school and I'm friends with a lot of these people that I'm incoming and we're trying out with. And so, each year, like my freshman and JV year, when I played on both teams, my freshman and sophomore year, I played, right? But I didn't play the most, right? And I made the team. And so, a lot of players' journeys end after JV basketball, at least in my hometown, and it's going to be different for everyone's different locations. And it was something I really wanted to be a part of. And as I kind of look back on it, I think, I loved basketball, and I really loved some of the guys that were on the basketball team that I wanted to be on the team so bad because I just wanted to be with them all the time. I wanted to practice. Like, that's just what I love doing. That's like, I can't even imagine, what else I would be doing. So, junior year comes around, a new coach comes around. I'm competing. You're competing against juniors and seniors, and I just wasn't good enough at that time to make the team. And so at that time, it really not unheard of, but very un not u unusual. Unusual is the word I'm looking for juniors to play JV, to continue to play JV where we were. So I got the opportunity to play JV, and that year between my junior and senior year, I really wanted to make the team. Like, that was I was committed to it. And so I think I spent 4 hours of intentional training between basketball training, strength training, and conditioning training that entire summer leading up between junior and senior year. And when the school year started, I remember I would wake up at 5 a.m. every single day to either lift or get in a basketball training or do conditioning. Boom, school ends, and I would do the same thing. Then sometimes I'd play some pickup in the evening. Like, I was incredibly dedicated, and I had a goal with it, right? My goal was just to make the team. My goal wasn't to be a 20 points per game scorer. I literally just wanted to make the team, right? Which is, I feel like, a big goal difference between a lot of people that play today. And not necessarily that other goals are wrong. That was just my personal one. And so when I had that feeling, when coach sat me down, I came into his office after tryouts, right? And I was beating people in every single sprint and just making sure I did the little things, right? When he said, "You made the team," like I laid the fist bump in, like I was excited. And the role I played on that team, like I had felt like I had accomplished, and maybe one of my like slight regrets would be that I kind of like my goal was so much to make the team that I let my foot off the gas and I didn't even like really try to challenge for minutes and play time because I was just so happy to be on the team. I definitely led the team in high fives. Long story short, we had a very successful season winning tournaments and going on to state, and we lost to the first round to a Division I player who played over at Pepperdine. He shot the lights out. He scored 2,000 points in his high school career over in Santa Cruz High School. So it was, long story short, right? That's something that I feel like is the reason where I am today is, right, as you talked about, did I ever see myself as a basketball, wanting to be a basketball coach? And I actually was in baseball, kind of go back to baseball. It was, I don't know what year it was, but one of my friends had turned to me, and I was encouraging my teammates, just be like, he was like, "Furtado, I want you to coach my kids." And so that was the first time anything was ever planted in my mind about potentially being a coach. I hadn't, when I finished, high school, my dreams were to like open up a nonprofit for kids and have like an after school program, like a, basically like an academy, right, where they can go after school and weightlift and train and all that. And then, college comes around and things just kind of change, and I'm, kind of exploring the world. So I wouldn't say I directly wanted to become a coach, but I knew that I wanted to work and make an impact on youth. So I kind of started with the Boys and Girls Club. Long story short, I ran a basketball program there in Eugene, Oregon. I went to University of Oregon, and I just kind of fell in love with it, got into recreational coaching, then came down here to Los Angeles, and I worked somewhere called Royal Basketball School. I ranked up quickly to becoming the head coach of a gym. Then I became the director of coaches, and I recognized I also put on my entrepreneurial hat and was like, okay, I can go and do this on my own as well because there's a market for this. And this is one of the gifts that I feel like the universe gave me was coaching. So I had always known that I wanted to make an impact on youth. And then I kind of just leveraged my love for basketball that I kind of fell into basketball coaching. I didn't kind of intentionally seek it out. I just kept going with it and building with it because I loved it.
I love that. That's, some of the best stories and, the greatest things in life come from the unexpected sometimes. And sounds like, it kind of just nudged in that direction slower and slower over time, or I should say faster and faster. But yeah, that's a great story. And one of the things I want to circle back to is, that drive and commitment to make the team. Because I talk about the inner fire, something that we all have within all of us. This thing that drives us beyond our why, that ignites our why and our purpose. And that's the thing that really catalyzes us to keep on moving forward. That, when someone has the skill, but you have the will, like you can keep on going and outperform the person with the great skill. And so with you, it seemed like that was the case. You were so determined. You were going to make that team no matter what. You're waking up at 5 a.m. Where did that inner fire come from for you?
That's a great question. I feel like part of it is genetic because I'll go back to my actually I told you I'm going to Portugal here in like 10 days. I actually my grandparents immigrated from Portugal, small islands. It's called Flores, which is in the Azores, which are islands off of Portugal. They came in here in the 60s. My dad was born in 65, and so obviously you do what you can, right? So where I'm from, there's a lot of trees. My grandpa was, he was a lumberman, and my grandma, was obviously a housekeeper and did a lot of, different jobs where you don't really have to speak much good English, right? And then my dad comes along and he didn't go to college. I think he did one semester at a community college for a building program or a business class. I don't even exactly know what it was, but he started his own construction company. So that, long story short, like that has been in my DNA about like kind of going and getting in terms of entrepreneurial. I feel like that's where some of my like drive comes from, like a genetic drive. And I also believe that can also be in anyone, right? So I feel like what it developed for me is like I feel like I just like I really wanted to make the team, right? And I knew that I was gonna have to work a little bit differently than other people to make the team because it is the best, like, right? Like I rode the bench, but I would have probably started on any other team in the entire it's a county. It's not even a city because we all the little cities, it's so small. So with that, right, I just love the game of I feel like it came from love, right? So if it's a great question that you asked. So I'm kind of grappling with it at the same time, but I feel like it came from like a truly like a love of the game and like a love of wanting to be on that team.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly why I wanted to go into coaching, was for the love of the game. I've been doing it for about 20 years now, 25, and it's something I've been waiting for the right time. We've had previous conversations, and for me, now is the right time, and I'm just so excited to start this new chapter of coaching basketball and, the youth in particular, and giving back and sharing, some of the things that I wish I would have known sooner, and just passing that forward. That's one of the most fulfilling things that, we could ever do. And, that ties back to my next question here is, with that nonprofit and making the impact on the youth specifically, was that because, like, from your passion, just hearing you talk now, like, was it the passion of the sport? Was it, you enjoyed it so much that time with your friends when you did make the team and you want more people to have these types of experiences? Or, like, where did this origins for the nonprofit come into play?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head on a couple of them, and I can continue to expand on it. So After my senior year, the summer in between my senior and year and freshman year, I got my personal fitness or personal trainer certification because I was just like, I want to train people, right? Like I actually wanted to be like a trainer, and I trained one of my buddies who was a junior going into senior year a little bit. And then before I w moved to college and recognized that human physiology, that's a lot of science, right? I can't completely major. I think I was kind of discouraged with it, although now I'm kind of learning a lot of the biomechanics and all the fun stuff now. With the nonprofit, right, when I was thinking about it, and BTG is not a nonprofit right now. I am working on building out a nonprofit side. I is exactly what you're talking about. I recognized that like I had some privilege with, I was able to I actually played more a club baseball or yeah, it's called like Legion, so travel baseball. But I just recognize that I want everyone to have this opportunity that I have to play sports, right? Like, and just be able to be involved. I don't think it always just has to be for elite level players. And I just wanted to create some opportunity where I wanted to give back. I think that's where my kind of my mom's side. My dad actually gives back a lot too through his business. But my mom is now a she has her master's in social work. She just went back and got it because she just wanted to give back and help people, and has always instilled into me and my sister to give back and be of service to people. So I just wanted, that's something that was important to me. That was a value that was instilled to me. And I was like, well, I love basketball. And I think at the time I like, when I think about the dream, it was like just like a sports performance, like a, I think I can imagine like a big gym and a weight room. And so just like it comes from, yeah, that recognition of privilege in terms of it's really like can be very expensive to play club basketball, and it can be
Sure.
very expensive to play club, and I want to be able to give that back. And so and I just love the sport so much. I felt like I was like everyone should play sports, right?
Yeah. And I think it's so valuable for the youth because sports teach us so many lessons about life. And in particular, I think, well, for me at least, it's that constant embracing the failure and just facing that head on. Like you're always failing, whether it's, in practice, you're not doing this drill right, you can't, do it this certain way, or even at the game, like you get the loss and, that can really sting sometimes. And I think, I really believe that like in those painful moments and in those failures, that's where the biggest growth happens. And a lot of times we try to avoid it, but we know that that's where the big things come from. So I'm curious, based on your experiences as a coach, but also just personal as well, if anything rings a bell here, have you had any of those pivotal experiences that really challenged and shaped your overall lens for life?
Yeah, I think there's a few. There's one that I expanded on in terms of like of failing and making the varsity team. I think that was instrumental to me, playing basketball. And I think number two, I think one of the biggest like recent personal life changes would be I am from a small town, like I had mentioned. I went to University of Oregon, which is in Eugene, Oregon, which is between that and Springfield's like 200 something thousand people, and I could be off from that. It's really not that big, right? It's very nature oriented, community oriented. It does not feel big, right? Does not feel like 200,000 people. And then my girlfriend at the time, my fiance now, got into USC to get her grad degree. And so I was like, well, it looks like we're going down to Los Angeles. And those first 9 months, I hated them. I just did not like it at all. It was huge, right? Like coming from the Pacific Northwest, where it's beautiful and green and lush, and everyone in general is pretty nice and friendly, and not that people in LA aren't. It's just like it's a city, right? It's different. It was way different. And I think one of the biggest challenges is I just didn't feel like I like fit in here, right? I didn't feel like I belonged. It was kind of post-COVID too, so you're not hanging out with people a ton. And it was lonely. I remember there was a stretch of probably like 3 to 6 months where I just thought about Eugene every single day. I'm like, I want to go back. I want to go back. I want to go back, And it took like a full like 9 months of being here before I was like, ah, I'm starting to like it. Yeah, and I think one of the things that really helped me, right, like actually like make this my home for the time being is I just wanted to focus on how can I get out, right? So for me, it was like going to Royal Basketball School and starting to build some friendships there. I think that, coaching honestly was a really pivotal point in giving me a purpose and wanting and me wanting to be here. I actually work for another organization called Peace Players. They do some great work in South LA area, and they promote peace in areas that are typically prone to civil unrest and just have been unjust to the systems. And so that was really cool. So I just kind of got involved and in trying to get to know as many people as I could, especially in the basketball community, really kind of helped me out. There's a place called Cross Court where I got to play basketball. It was like close to where I was living at the time. It's not anymore, and I don't go there anymore. But just like I think finding that community really helped me kind of get through. And now that I'm over here, close to the beach versus where I initially moved, I think it's something that fits me a little bit more. And I feel like really helped me push myself out of my comfort zone. I feel like I'm a lot better coach because I moved down here to Los Angeles. I'm working with a lot of different, diverse groups that I didn't get the opportunity to work with, especially in Humboldt County and Eugene, that, has helped me be able to, like, I have to be able to connect with so many different walks of life. And I'm a big person. My coaching philosophy, like one of my pillars would be connection, my ability to connect with players and have players feel like they belong. And so being able to be thrown into an environment like Los Angeles is, it's 19 million people in the greater Los Angeles area. It's overwhelming, but I also think it's been integral to my, development as a coach.
Yeah, I love how you bring up the community, and you mentioned that early on as well, but it's so true. Like for basketball, it's like a brotherhood in a sense. And when I was, diagnosed with Crohn's disease, I was homebound my entire senior year and had surgeries. A lot of people from my life, they dropped off, but the ones who stayed were the basketball brothers who, we're in the trenches at practice together. We've been through stuff before, and those are the relationships that really grow and blossom over time. And, those were the guys that I couldn't get off my back when I didn't want to deal with anybody, or not deal with anybody. I just didn't want any interaction because at that point I was just mentally not great and I was self-isolating. But, those guys, they were always there for me in times when, I needed it the most. And so I think that just really speaks volumes, and the fact that you were able to, in a sense, like come out of your shell a bit in this new area and just start meeting new people and getting involved. You already got that similar interest with the basketball, so it's pretty easy to make friends in that type of environment. So and I think that's something that you do a great job with by listening to your podcast, like creating that connection. And so one of my questions here is, how do you cultivate connections amongst your players, but then also like as a organizational standpoint?
That's a great question. I think first off with players, right? I make sure it sounds so simple, but like I will dap everyone up before I start practice. And I will dap everyone up at the end of practice. Coaches, players, everyone. Super simple. It's an acknowledgement. And I feel like it comes with time too. I really value spending time with players, right? So I'm thinking like I've done bowling trips. I've hosted people. I have an apartment complex with like a clubhouse area, so I've hosted people in that area, right? I'm big on finding ways that I can help athletes create connections with themselves as well, not even just myself, right? So how can, especially with, and you can probably attest to this as well, is sometimes like some of these social skills for some of these kids were really detrimented by, and that's probably not the right word, through the pandemic. So it's like relearning how to socialize. So getting them to like communicate with each other through prompts, right? So I'll give specific examples, like at a camp or practice, right? I got my team, I got my group. Boom, partner up. You're gonna answer this question. They have to listen, and then I'll like be like, boom, what did your partner say? So I like, oh, like you actually listened, because If not, you're like, oh, I don't know what he said. You know how teenage boys can be sometimes. So that's a way. I'm big on asking questions. I'm big on actually like being curious about an athlete's life. Brothers, sisters is the easiest way to start. I try and keep it light sometimes. Favorite cereal, different little things. Like it doesn't have to be super deep. And every kid is different. Some kids are going to be more willing to share their entire lives, and some kids, right? It's like pulling teeth, trying to get them to talk. And so, I'm someone that's a better like. I'm not necessarily a talker, right? When I talk is when I'm on the podcast, whether it's mine or this podcast. I can ramble on right here, but when I'm like in connections, maybe I'll ramble maybe to my fiance, but in general, I prefer to ask questions and listen. So if I'm going to be honest, sometimes it can get a little awkward if I get a kid, right, who, they don't want to talk either, right? I like asking questions and having people talk and talk and talk. Like that's where I do well. And then so, I'll just be honest. Sometimes it can be a little bit, weird and uncomfortable to develop those, connections, right? So it's not always a seamless process.
Yeah, and for me, I'm actually coaching here in Dearborn, Michigan, and just talking about the different dynamics that you got going on to moving to different cities and just the different dynamic and environment. Dearborn, Michigan, it's like the second highest Arabic population in the world, and so that's all it is over there, and that's all I'm coaching. And I say that like I grew up in that system. So like for me, it's just like second nature. I played in that from like 7 to 12 or 13. So like for me, it's just normal. And like, I get along with everybody there, but I'm like the only like white kid out there. And it's
Right.
just like a different dynamic. So for me, it's like almost like a cultural barrier as well. And just like figuring out how different things work and how different cultures operate. And that can also just throw another layer into the mix when you're traveling to different cities and just communicating with boys, girls, different age groups, whether it's like 10-year-olds, 15, 18. Like I'm sure there's, well, I know there's different approaches for all of that. So for me, just being in this early on now, that's one of the key things that I'm realizing is the communication. That's one of the biggest things that I need to just cultivate my skills a little bit better, because I'm like you, where I can rip off on a podcast, certain people, like I'm really chatty, but in general, I like to be the guy behind the scenes and more asking questions. So
Right.
that's something that I'm dealing with as well, because I'm new to these girls. I came in mid-season and they're like, well, who's this guy? So I have to establish my presence and also build those relationships at the same time. And it's been a work in progress. It's very humbling and fulfilling at the same time.
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest things is it takes time, right? My best relationships I have are with the players who have been playing with me and training with me since last, spring, right? So the relationships with the kids that I just started in March are not as deep and as strong. And I genuinely think it takes 3 months to really establish like a solid baseline, right? Anything before that, it's just tough, right? It's just tough. I really do. Unless you're spending like, right, that you accelerate it through quality time, right? So unless you're, like a season is different, right? Like a high school season, because you're practicing every day. So that's a lot more time. Whereas club is two times a week, plus, you got your weekends, so that's 4 out of the 7 days, right? And so it'll after 2 months, then there's 3 months, right? And then it feels like, oh, we figure it out at the end of the season. It's because you've then spent X amount of time. And that's why I'm big on continuity. So I think if you can, have a high school team that's a club team play together, right? They're going to be even better when they come back because they've already been playing together.
Yeah, and you look at those international teams, you're like, oh, USA should be blowing them out. But then you realize that these guys have been playing together since they're 13 years old, and what, they're like in their 30s now, like over a decade together. And that chemistry, it shows on the court against some of the best in the world.
Yes, 100%. No, 100%. I feel like that's And we could kind of go down the international US basketball conversation, but just to kind of build on what you're talking about, and you can see it in at the NBA level, right? I mean, the Celtics just won, and yes, they were probably the most talented. They just got Kristaps and Jrue Holiday, but that their core nucleus was all have all been together, right? Drew or Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, and oh gosh, why am I forgetting Tatum?
Tatum,
Tatum, they've been together, right? I'm a big believer because sometimes people are like, let's go grab, the best players we can and put them together. It's like, it really hasn't worked out. LeBron, Wade, and Bosh didn't win their first years. I'm trying to think if there's anyone that really won their first year being together and being a superpower team.
Yeah, I don't think the Celtics in 08 didn't either.
Yeah,
Like,
the
they put that
Nets,
super
right? Then.
team.
Yeah, exactly. Nets didn't work out. I'm trying to think. So, we're probably getting off topic, but nonetheless, that teamwork, chemistry, and camaraderie is very essential.
Dr. Doug's offers the best organic topical balms for protecting, healing, and restoring your skin and life. Just twist off a cap, apply like lotion, and get ready to feel outstanding. My favorite products are the magnesium balm for headaches and recovery balm for coaching basketball or training for a Spartan race. But that's not all. It started with Dr. Doug's original Miracle Balm, a rejuvenating balm fueled with all organic ingredients, including beeswax, extra virgin olive oil, extra virgin coconut oil, shea butter, peppermint and lavender essential oils, and vitamin E. This one-of-a-kind solution is designed to tackle an array of skin concerns such as itchy, dry skin, eczema, any rashy, irritated areas, and much more. Now, if you're bright and pasty like me, you may want to consider their Miracle Balm plus zinc as a natural sunscreen to keep you from frying up without any harmful SPF chemicals that are linked to cancer. Now, do you hate bugs? Me too. But we got you. Try Dr. Doug's Bug Potion to repel bugs, relieve itchy bites, and kill bacteria so you can enjoy the great outdoors once again. There is truly something for everybody, including that little one in your life who is trying to tell you to get Dr. Doug's Baby Balm for their bum right now. And here's your chance. Click the link in our show notes now to enhance your life with Dr. Doug's balms and get extra to share with those who you care about. Take back your power and feel outstanding with Dr. Doug's natural balms. Yeah, and something else I want to cover here is that we see examples, and I've mentioned this, like the will and the skill, and some people will have, extreme high skill levels, but mentally they're just not locked in. And for that point, they're being inconsistent with their behavior and their play because, when their mental's good, they're playing good, but then if something happens, they can immediately go down the other path. So, how do you mentally pull back a player in the game when their mind starts dropping and their performance starts dropping?
That's a great question that I'm still figuring out the answer to as we speak right now. And it's again going to depend on every single player. I think some players, the players that I know for the longest, right? I know how I can kind of rewire them quicker. The players that I'm just learning, it takes some time. It takes some trial and error. There's some gray areas. I think as far as strategies go, I feel like knowing, right? And I think Tammy Matheny is the one who connected us. And I think she does a great job talking about the why. Right, knowing the why your player plays, right, plays a sport, and so reconnecting that, and let's go through a story example, right? Let's have a player. We'll use basketball because that's both of our worlds. You have a point guard who's turning the ball over a lot in game, and they're missing some of their open shots from three that they usually shoot for a higher percentage, we'll say. I feel like I would, I would obviously I'd pull them out, right? And then obviously sometimes it's got to be quick, right? I think one of the things that I talk about a lot with my players, what I would do in that situation is just be like, okay, it's your choice, right? sometimes you can't control, right, some of those turnovers, right? And that's in the past. You can't control the past, right? What can you control right now? And so getting them to focus, refocus themselves in the moment, right, on what they can control, right? Are you going to be able to, do you have, right, asking certain like targeted questions? Do you have, I don't want to say the ability, but do you have what it takes to focus on the moment now, right? Are you able to forget about those, mistakes in the past, right? Because that's all it is, right? It's like being able to bounce back from mistakes. And I always love this shooting analogy. This is for a great shooter, right? So if you are a great shooter, shoots, 40% from three. So if you go 0 of 5, right, from three in the first half, well, then if that's your numbers in the second half, it would show that you would go 4 of 5, right? Because you the data, that's if you're a 40% shooter, right? So just understand the math and the numbers that it takes, right? Again, you have to have the skill to do it, right? But it's that, as you know, as you go up, right, you have to be able to respond, I got next, I got next. And so teaching your athletes a keyword, whether it's a two clap or they mentally say, I got next, like that's actually just what we did at the last BTG camp. We will, what one thing you guys can do as coaches, for the coaches that are listening, and I just got this from Jay Wright, like you can give a plus one for how they respond, right? Let's say a team is playing, and then they turn the ball over, they go two clap, or they go encourage their teammates. You can give that team a plus one. Gamifying everything. They put their head on hands on their head. They don't run back on defense. Boom, that's a negative one to your team. And if you do that, right, like that's a big thing I'm going to start doing a little bit more, is just gamifying what you prioritize most. You can't gamify everything, right? Otherwise, you're not gamifying anything because it's so hard to track. Unless you got 18 assistants in your Division One program, it's just too hard to track. So finding those three things that are most important to you, and they're going to be most important to your team too, and helpful for your team, and then gamifying them. That's kind of how to, the positive reinforces the behavior. Giving them a negative point, right, is correction. And if obviously if it happens over and over and over again, you may need to have a conversation after a game, after a practice.
Yeah, that's really good. I've heard Pat Riley, he has, I forget, I used to know what it was, but now I gotta revisit it. He had this point system that it was all of these like what's the word? Intangible assets that these guys are doing. So like whether it's their weight or their speed or all these things, they're tallying up all these plus and minuses beyond just these stat scores. And those are the culture that they want to bring into their organization, these types of guys that fit, this model. And it's almost like putting your entrepreneurial cap on in the basketball arena is like, what are these KPIs that are going to make our team, that much better? What's going to elevate our culture? And then setting that standard and making sure that you hit it and tallying it up. I know that, like for me, like just keeping score on a scrimmage is hard enough sometimes, but
I know.
Just putting in some notes or something like in your phone, like that's what I started doing, and that's working with the score. So if any other coaches are out there, they want to start tracking things a little bit in more detail, just making some designated notes and spots to do that, even a journal. Like I'm huge on writing things down. I'm a bit old school in that sense, but what we write down, we remember, so it works.
And it could be random too. Like I can be, you could be like, I just feel like giving them five points for that response, like, and they're gonna be like, what, coach, what? But like it doesn't matter, right? Because at the end of the day, you're playing for the long game. And I think that's what matters, is if you can, because I do the same thing. It's hard to keep track of everything. Like I've kind of done it before. So and even if you don't gamify it, at least celebrate it. Hey, Sammy, I see that that's a great mistake response, right? Just giving them that positive reinforcement that what they did well. And then obviously if you're going to correct, like I think one of the biggest mistakes coaches make is they just yell. But coaches are teachers, and you need to teach, hey, instead of putting your hands on the head, two clap, right? Two clap, right? Just giving them just quick reminders.
Yeah, and like you said, with the failure, it's just like reshifting your focus and start looking at the positive and what's next rather than the past and those things that those turnovers or those missed shots that continue to snowball. It's just that reframe of perspective, okay, now we can move forward and, do the things we want to do here. But yeah, man, I'm loving this conversation. We are getting out to the fourth quarter here. So one of these questions that I wanted to ask you is, what are some of the ways that you make your practices fun and engaging?
So as I sent you over that link over to right here, Transforming Basketball, recommend this book to all basketball coaches. I do a lot of small-sided games. So I actually, with the podcast that's just coming out today with Pete Steinberg, former rugby coach. As a coach, you want to have, right, if I'm going to talk a little bit as a coach, and I'll kind of infuse my trainer hat as well. You have to have a vision of your team, right? You got who you got, right? I don't know if they're 5'2", I don't know if they're 6'10". What you have, right, is going to change maybe how you play.
Yes.
So instead of doing a ton of boring drills that are the same thing over and over again, same patterned plays, right? How can you help your players develop skills through what are called small-sided games? So this is something new. And I would look into Alex Saramah. He's great. Rob Gray has a great book that goes into even more of the science of it. But there is new research around kind of how players learn. And long story short, I don't do a lot of things on air. So on air is typical coaching, 5-on-0, just different thing. I'll do some stuff. Like I will do some stuff. It's not like I never do it, but I won't be 100% of my practice. I do a lot of competitive stuff where I'll manipulate the advantages. So defense will start on the hip. They'll start behind. You only have two dribbles to go somewhere. You have three dribbles to go somewhere. I do a lot of 2-on-2, a lot of 3-on-3. I love 3-on-3. I think it's a great way to teach the game. Now, if I have a team and I have a big man and I want to do, I want to run a lot of pick and roll, then I will be like, hey guys, we're going to start every single possession. We're going to start in a pick and roll. And so kind of just getting them and teaching them how to play and doing a ton of competitive games where they're working on their skills, right? And just having fun, right? It's fun. Kids want to compete, right? Kids don't want to do 5-on-0. Kids don't want to, and sometimes it's important, right? You have to do it. And everyone has their own different styles, right? Like one of my varsity coach, I called him last year. He's like, I still do 5-on-0 because I feel like it's important for offenses to get a rhythm. And so if it works for you, it works for you. But I would say the more competitive you can make practice, and the better.
Yeah, that's something honestly we need to do a bit more of. Like we talk about just having lines and people are stagnant and then they start like talking and goofing off a bit and then they're not even ready, they're next in line and they don't even know it. And then that's where coaches are coming in and like, hey, pay attention, like you're next up, stuff like that. But yeah, like I have to get into those activities myself and start bringing out that competitiveness in them and just make it engaging and fun, because at the end of the day, like that's what a lot of it is for some of these kids. Like they're there to have fun, and right now it's summertime. Like that's what's on their mind. So you kind of have to meet them halfway, and I think I heard from someone a little bit of bargaining as well.
No, and it's not like you can still work on stuff that you want to work on. I think that's where it's taken me a little bit to kind of learn. So give me a player in there, or give me a scheme. Like, what do you want to work on? I'll give you a drill for it to make it more engaging. Just for an example.
Yeah, we need to work on our freaking defense.
Okay. So you need to work on your defense. So I would go here. I call it kind of my other coach calls it the Hunger Games. So I would go, right, we can go either 3-on-3, or you can go 5-on-5, kind of depending on your numbers and what you want. They have to, I would just score it where, actually, let's circle this back. All right, first start with POA defense, right? So point of attack. You have to be able to stop the ball. So I'm coming here, I'm doing a drill where they have to learn how to move your feet and chest up, right? If they get a chest up, right? They get 1 point. So you're gamifying the defense. So that's kind of a one-on-one drill. So instead of slide, 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 like the traditional zigzag, you're going to do a drill where they're actually playing live within a confined space, because you give the space too big, the offense is just going to get buckets. So you go confined space, offense is trying to shift them, defense has to learn how to slide their feet and chest up. So that's a POA defense. It's competitive. They're going to want to shift their feet. They're going to want to try and cross each other up. So they're actually working on their ball handling at the same time. Ends up being a pretty good drill. Next would be kind of, are you all struggling with kind of jumping to the ball and playing help side and that fun? Fun stuff.
Yeah, so a lot of times, like, they'll end up just switching without, like,
Okay.
two people will be on the ball, and then getting in front of the ball, that's another big thing. Like, a lot of it's running alongside the ball, and then you're just, like, running up for layup with them.
Got you. Yeah. So just getting them to chest up. So I would do a drill where, yeah, because it's like transition basketball is everything in youth basketball. That's how you score most of your points. So if you can stop the other team from scoring in transition, right, you give yourself a chance. And if you like, that's what I'm big on. I like to play my guys to play fast. I'm like, rebound, we're run, we're out, we're out, we're out. And so a big thing would be like doing little certain transition drills and then giving point. I would just give points to defense, right? I do some, one practice where you reward the defense the entire time. So like a 3-on-3 shell, right? You're kind of forcing players. You give a little advantage to the offense. The defense then has to recover and figure it out. Obviously with some coaching and some teaching and just really emphasizing chesting up. So I just really gamify the defense.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to really get into that link that you shared and more of that book with just exploring some of these activities. And, you know, it's like creating your own systems as well. Like, that's the thing. It's not a copy
Right.
and paste thing, but, you know, we're all going to have different players. We're all going to have different systems. So, customizing that and making it unique, you know, that's where, you know, it's fun to get creative like that as well. So,
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. And, it's good to have you in my corner to bounce any questions off of.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, and that's the most important thing is to have coaches that are open-minded and curious, because I feel like a lot of coaches that I've had work with, they just repeat this, rinse and repeat the same stuff they've learned, you know, and because it's easy, it's comfortable, right? But as we talked about in this conversation, I think we should also step out of our comfort zone and be willing. You have to be willing to fail as a coach. Like I've done some stupid drills, and I tell my players, I'm like, that was a dumb drill. I'm sorry. We won't do it again. You know, so you kind of have to be vulnerable in a way of being like, yo, like, you know, I'm trying to innovate here. We're trying to like get you right. It's not just that fun. I'm here to help you work on your left hand or you know, work on finishing off the 2 feet. Well, this show stunk. So we'll move on from it.
Yeah, no, it's always, you know, innovating and trying things out, trial and error, and then you'll figure out something that works, and it's like, okay, let's double down on that.
Right.
But one of my, I got two more questions here, and, you know, now that, you know, that's what a fun and engaging practice looks like, I'm curious, like, in your mind, what just makes, like, a great practice for Coach Furtado, like, and how do you set up that environment to facilitate, you know, this ideal practice?
So I'll go back to my club season. We had an hour practice. We had the 15 and the 16, you guys. They practiced together. And it was all about the energy. Energy, energy, energy was a big thing. I think an excellent practice to just re-emphasizing that. I would love to just get down and dirty and get right into the nuts and bolts, but I do find that it's beneficial to have some sort of psychological confidence building exercises, right? Obviously, you do some sort of dynamic warm up. You know, I do a drill called five ball Olympic shooting. It just gets up a lot of shots, some layups, some passing. They have to communicate one, two. We go up to like 50-ish. So that's a good way to just kind of get their mojo going. And then I'll do transition work. So I love, like I said, like I love teams that play fast. I will probably coach a team one day where maybe my guys are slogs and I got to slow the game down. But for right now, I have some pretty decent athletes and I think it's the best way to score the basketball at the high school level. So I'm like, rebound and run, let's go. And so I'll teach them through a transition game and then we'll compete, right? I'll do a lot of 2-on-2 and 3-on-3 stuff that's based on the offense that we are running. Any defensive principles that I want to go over, I'll include them in it. So that way I'm working on the offense and the defense at the same time because there's not enough time to do both. It's just not ideal world is like you have two coaches, one focuses on the offense, one focuses on the defense, but that's a luxury in a lot of high school and club basketball scenarios. So you maybe just pick a principal or two to kind of do reminders on. And then we're competing a lot of the practice, right? Like I would have 5-on-5 like for the last 20 minutes, where I'm emphasizing stuff, right? Where this is what we're looking for. We're not going to just do this. But I thought like the 15 team actually ended up being better than the 16 team. Part of it was because they've been playing for longer, with each other, right? Continuity. It wasn't necessarily they were more skilled, but they really fed off of playing against that. Like I just really I'm a big believer in competing, and actually playing basketball, like actually playing 3-on-3, actually playing 5-on-5. Yeah, that's what you'll see in a lot of my practice will be a lot of play. It's not rolling the ball out like you won't. It's not 24-hour fitness pickup where guys dribbling 55 times and taking a terrible shot, right? Like you're not doing that. So it's just learning how to play with each other with actual defense.
Yeah, no, that's so good, and that's something that we're doing as well. Like we have 90-minute practices, and once we get 6 o'clock and there's 30 minutes left, like we're scrimmaging for that 30 minutes, and both of the coaches, like I'll be on one side, he's on the other, and we're just constantly calling things out and little adjustments and stuff. But they're at that point where they just got to play and get better, and obviously we can do that with the drills and stuff, but there's nothing really like a 5-on-5 game that's competitive and serious, and you're working with your team, building that continuity and that chemistry. And that's why I'm thinking like, oh, we got to do more 3-on-3 drills and stuff like that, like before the scrimmage, just to continue that momentum and that confidence building, like you said as well. So we actually did, we don't normally do 3-point shots, but as of recently, we saw a couple start making them. So we're like, okay, let's just do a 3-point drill. And we were doing it for about 10, 15 minutes. The longer and longer that went on, every time they would make one, their faces would light up. You could see the confidence rating. They're giving each other high fives and they're seeing how many they can make in a row and whatnot. And we're just having a good, like, we're getting rebounds, but we're just having a good time watching them at that point. Like, we're getting confident and we're getting uplifted just by seeing, their energy. So, doing more things like that, it's great. And, it's good to have you reiterate that for us as well, and add some of your own pointers there too. But yeah, this has been such a good conversation. I'd say a fire conversation. But I do got one last question before we wrap things up here. So, what has been one of the greatest lessons or pieces of advice received that has made the biggest impact on you?
That's a great
I know we're
question.
going from basketball and then this big life question.
Yeah, but this is what I love talking about. I think for me, I feel like it's consistency. Consistency, consistency, consistency. And I feel like I learned that through my parents without them telling me, like it's like a subconscious thing. And I feel like that's something like my parents always consistently showed up for me. I always tell the story. Like I think my dad missed me. Like I don't know how many games. I had 500 plus games as a kid. I probably can count on one hand how many games he missed, So just that continued consistency. And that's really has been my key to success as a was as a basketball player, right? Because I consistently just outworked other people. And now as a business owner, right? Like I'm coming in, most of the other programs that are in the area, people are from Los Angeles. People have all these connections, and I've just kind of consistently shown up each day. Like there are, I don't want, yeah, there are no excuses, right? Like I can make all the excuses I want, but I have a lot of good things that are working for me as well. So just if you can be consistent, you're gonna be a lot, you're gonna, push yourself ahead of a lot of people because most people are pretty, they're hot and they're cold, they're hot and they're cold. So even when I'm not feeling up to it, I'm still working out. I'm still making sure I'm putting in my time. And so obviously, if I need some recovery, I'll recover. But like, if you can just be consistent every single day for your athletes, for the people in your life that are, not just in your professional life, I feel like that'll take you far.
Yeah, that's such a great lesson to hammer home as the final nugget here. leading by example as well with that consistency. And the only way that you're going to lose or not get to your goal is if you stop and you cut that string of consistency off. So keep on going, and you can get to those places where you want to be. But now, before we head up and wrap this up, let us know if there's anything that you're working on or something that you're excited about right now or coming up in the future that we can get involved with here.
Yeah, I think one of the big things is the Bridging Impact podcast. I'm slowly working on turning it into a nonprofit. So if you follow on the podcast, I'm sure I'll keep some updates there. But I interview a lot of, professionals like yourself, Dan, who are a lot smarter than I am, and I just ask questions away, bombs away, and then sometimes I'm sharing some nuggets that I'm learning as well. So that's a good way to kind of, get some Bridging Impact experience if you enjoyed kind of some of the wisdom I was sharing here. And then you can also follow BTG Basketball. I'm going to start sharing a lot of different drills that you're kind of talking about that are a little bit different than maybe the traditional drills you see on Instagram or wherever else you get drills. So that's my goal. And if you happen to be in the Los Angeles area, you want to connect, I'd be happy to connect. I'd love to connect, and help impact as many youth as we can.
Awesome. Whenever I go to California, I make sure I hit Venice Beach and go play basketball on that iconic court. So I'll be reaching out to you next time I make a trip out there.
There we go. There we go. I don't live that, I'm like 2 miles down the road from it.
Man, that's perfect. That's the life. You're
Yeah, it is.
good,
It's
man.
fun.
Awesome. So Justin, thank you so much for impacting us today. You are empowering future generations with life lessons and skills that will continue to grow and better their lives on and off the court as they continue to develop. You lead by example with your willingness to give back and do the right thing, and humanity is brighter and better because of you. I'm grateful that we crossed paths, and I'm excited to continue growing with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate you having me on. It's been an awesome conversation.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of EMG Transformations. You never know how one valuable insight can make such a big impact. Please leave a 5-star review if this episode had a positive impact on you. And don't be shy to screenshot and share episodes on social that you found helpful so we can spread the message and make the world a better place. You never know who may need to hear and the impact it has on them too. We're only scratching the surface. There's so much more to learn. Subscribe and stick around to manage stress, improve your health, and create lasting lifestyle changes. We'll see you next time on EMG Transformations.